I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have in the studio today our co-host, Senator Dan McKay.
Hey, Natalie.
Dan's on the right, and on the left, we have Shireen Gorbani. Welcome, Shireen.
Thanks. Nice to be with you.
Nice to have...
Well pronounced this morning.
Yeah, we are, and always nice to have the Salt Lake County Council represented on the show. So nice to have you, Shireen.
Well, it's my honor to do that.
Thanks for slumming it with us today.
As spirited and happy as I feel in the studio today, there's some really hard news to talk about, and I'm going to start out with a tough one. This, what I'll refer to as the Mexico massacre, and these nine people who have some, in ways Utah ties, I guess, murdered in Mexico. I guess it's three adults, six children. It's caught a lot of national news. President Trump tweeted about it.
So some people know this, you know, from a historical standpoint. Some people know it, some people don't. But back before even Utah statehood, you know, Brigham Young asked some LDS pioneers to make the trek south and, you know, kind of head that direction. Mm-hmm. And they formed kind of the, for lack of a better word, I don't want to say the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints colonies, but you know, the Mormon colonies was what they were affectionately called down there.
And they're in sort of northern Mexico.
It's northern Mexico, yeah. Chihuahua, that kind of area. And so I have, in my interactions in college, I've gotten to know a few people that are from the colonies down there. And amazingly, they all know each other. I mean, it's a pretty small and very close-knit community. It'd be like one of our rural towns here in Utah in a lot of ways. And it's interesting because, you know, they hold a dual citizenship. All of them are both American and Mexican national citizens. And they, for the most part, you don't hear anything out of them. And they're pretty quiet and they just kind of go about their way. Mitt Romney.
I was just going to say, you got to correct me if I'm wrong, but the Romney clan has some roots there.
That's right. Mitt Romney's family's from down there. And so they've got, so that's a historical piece of Utah, really. That, you know, these are Utahns who moved down to Mexico and have kind of done this and have kind of pioneered this way in Mexico. And they love it down there. You know, and it is in a lot of ways, I think it is like a rural Utah lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so anyway.
So the tragedy. Shireen, what do you make of this?
So I just spent a little time reading through some of the news reports, and it's I think it's just as a fellow human, it's sickening. But to read the accounts of the children is really awful. To imagine these
doesn't
kids
get much more raw than this.
No. So it sounds like some were shot at point blank, and then others burned in the vehicles. And it's just like it just makes me sick.
Dan, Shireen and I were commenting on how, so aside from the human tragedy, but just interesting to see how the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, fundamental Mormons, and the Mormon tag is reported on. We were looking at both the New York Times coverage and the Salt Lake Tribune's, but it seems like the media is being pretty responsible about how they refer to these aspects of this faith.
Yeah, and I've seen, to that point, I have seen a couple of, so I watched a Fox News report this morning, because that's the only reliable news network.
What about this one?
So I was watching this Fox News report, and they actually had a member of the family come on and kind of correct some of the details that have had and had some of those issues. A gentleman by the name of Leif, who, and I can't remember his last name off the top of my head, but he gave this this great account, this account of what happened, factually based, told about, you know, how difficult this is for the family and those kinds of things. And at the very last question, there was this opportunity to make it political where, you know, the host of the show said, well, the president said this and Mexico's, you know, dealing with this. And how do you make this political? I loved his answer. His answer was, we aren't thinking about the politics at all. We are focused on, you know, our family, that kind of thing.
Hallelujah.
He said, and the other thing that I loved about it was, and the gentleman, I mean, he just handled this perfectly. And I think this is a good training for those who are in politics or when these tragedies happen. It was great because his response, not only that, was, I and our family are going to pray for the leaders of Mexico and for America and honestly for the cartels so that at the end of the day, we can come to a solution that doesn't involve more bloodshed. I was so touched by that response for a family from a family mm-hmm. member who a day ago had, you know, lost family members, right?
And this is a violent way.
To keep, to have a response like that when it's easy to be political or take some agenda, to just say, you know what, I'm just going to pray for the leaders. And that was cool.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the commentary. I also want to just talk about President Trump formally withdrawing from the Paris Climate Pact. Shireen, your thoughts from the political left.
Mm. So I think that, I mean, of course, like starting point, climate change is real. We are seeing the effects of it in many ways. Thinking that we're not doing as much as we can to use the political influence and power of the United States around these negotiations on the global scale, I think is a real missed opportunity. Doesn't demonstrate the kind of leadership that I would hope for from an administration, whether that's finding solutions on renewables or thinking about, you know, just the whole package that we're not at the table, I think is just a continued marker of the isolation and failures of this administration. It makes me worried that this conversation goes on without us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dan, love to hear your comment. But as I toss it to you, I wanted to just share an experience with you. When I worked at the EPA,
I knew you were going to say something.
Did you know this? Well, I had an international trip where I was in Paris at an environmental ministries gathering for the OECD, I guess it was. But I'm there with Administrator Leavitt, who's the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, our former governor. And I just remember being in a setting where everyone's wearing headphones. And, you know, there's all these little placards that say Saudi Arabia, United States and whatnot. But it was as if nobody was listening to anybody. Anyway, eventually they turned the time over to the United States and everybody stopped and listened.
Hmm.
And it was just a really powerful example to me of how people look to the United States. Hmm. So your comment.
You know, the Paris Accord has several problems. And one of them specifically, if the United States is going to be the only one that's making any effort in the accord, you know, I have real problems mm-hmm. in a situation where there are penalties and these other things, and everybody wants to look to the United States to fix all these problems. And I look at the global, you know, intent of the Paris Treaty and see that I think as a country, we are taking steps forward. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen significant steps forward, regardless of what you hear in the press. I think things are getting better.
Most of them are happening because of the market,
not because of the leadership of this administration, right? When we think about rollbacks on emissions
that's the way it's supposed to be, right? In
well,
a lot of respects,
Republicans feel.
People are.
Then why not be at the table? I mean, it's a missed economic opportunity when we're seeing Germany and China outpacing us in solar production. Just the economic opportunity that we could be missing out on by not being at the table is something I think we should all be concerned about.
Well, I think if we want to invite people to a new table, that's certainly an option, to Natalie's point. If we declare, here's where the table is, everyone's coming.
Yeah. Okay, let me transition to this. Senator Romney, our senator from Utah, some national polling that has showed that he's not very popular nationally. And it kind of caught me by surprise. It was 1 in 5 Americans see Mitt Romney favorably. Hmm. Did that surprise you, Dan?
Oh, man. In these...
Especially when he's taking on Trump, and so you'd think he'd get some love from the left.
No.
And he was the candidate for the right.
No. See, that's just it. In 2012, we offered a reasonable Republican to the national scene. They rejected him soundly, right? It's one of the worst electoral defeats the Republicans ever seen, right? Flip it, 4 years later, we offer them one of the most aggressive forms of a Republican president. Is that a fair way to say that, Shireen? Everybody knows what I mean. So, so, you know, you take that and that. So, you know, you have the left that wasn't happy with Mitt in 2012. They still aren't happy with Mitt, right? Uh-huh. For policy reasons and for other reasons. But it just highlights the fact that Mitt is not popular with Democrats and he's not popular with Republicans.
Yeah.
So anybody that thinks he's like building toward a presidential thing.
I'm in the political middle and he's really popular with me. And I see a handoff occurring to a new generation of leaders, and I really accept that you know, Senator Romney is in his, you know, later years of service, but I still love his leadership. But let's hear your commentary.
Yeah, so I should have looked into this a little bit more because I'm curious about how does this match up against other senators generally? You know, I don't know. I think if we think about the overall approval ratings of Congress, this feels really on point with how people feel
about Siri, how popular is Congress? Just kidding.
How aggressive is our president? So he has said that he stands on just a very small sliver of what the Republican Party is today. And I think that's unfortunate because many people generally, again, just in Utah, but I think kind of more broadly, find themselves in that sort of middle space, right? They want to see leadership there, but it doesn't tap into our love of the fight, to our partisanship. It's very hard to hold that space. And I think it's actually a space that it's interesting because I think Ben McAdams also stands in that space, but is actually quite popular here in Utah, right, in his district.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's something going on there. And I don't quite know what to make of it, other than I would say I'm guessing this is probably right in line with how a lot of people feel about their senators.
Yeah, interesting. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the 2019 municipal elections in Salt Lake City. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Dan McKay, slightly to the right of Natalie.
This is Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. Thanks,
like she's
Dan.
Smiling. Look at that.
I will take that. I'm not as far right as you are. Let's just put it that way.
Nobody is.
But
they're not healthy if they are.
I'll just share this with listeners. When I get in a campaign space with Republicans and I get in a campaign space with Democrats, I'm more comfortable with the Republicans. And so that's just how it is. So
not me.
Not me, she says. Okay, well, we had a big election this week, and Aaron Mendenhall has a big lead over Luz Escamilla in the Salt Lake City mayor's race. I think Mendenhall's ahead by about 5,800 votes. We'll get some more, I think, today and tomorrow. I think the big time will be about 3 p.m. on Thursday when that group of ballots is released, or the counts. Mm-hmm. Am I getting that about right?
Yeah, they'll catch up all the ones that were mailed in on the last day.
Shireen, you're an elected official in Salt Lake County, local government. What are you seeing?
So I think we're seeing, unfortunately, that a lot of people don't participate in municipal elections.
Yeah, 25% turnout.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what the number was for the city.
Even with a mail-out, mail-back, that's terrible.
It's terrible.
Terrible.
So I've been thinking a lot about that. What does it take to get people revved up, ready to go, ready to vote, excited to vote?
Bad management.
So
that is the key. You want to have good voter turnout, manage the place badly, and people show up.
Okay.
I'm not saying.
So, the complacency happens when things are going well.
Yeah.
When things are going well.
That's just
sure.
By definition. Yeah.
Sure. I think the downfall of that is that we do, as kind of we were just discussing, there's so many important decisions that are made at that city council, at the city level. So being engaged on these issues is so important. But, you know, I don't know. I think there was something about this race in particular, the Salt Lake City mayor's race, that was so. It was just so nice and it was so refreshing. But I do think that many people weren't super fired up. And that's something I've been thinking about a lot, too.
The ballots, it looks like it's 59-41 in favor of Aaron Mendenhall at this point. Dan, you're a student of politics and elections. Do you see Escamilla being able to make up ground there?
No, I see it as on the website, it's 58-41. Is that what you said?
Roughly, yeah.
58-41. Sorry, I missed
that. I was making sure it added to 100.
I was looking at the vote total. Yeah.
The economist in me.
Yeah, yeah.
Couldn't deal with the 99.
Versus 41.6 or 41.4. So as I look at it, there isn't a scenario statistically where Luz can overcome that deficit. Senator Escamilla. There isn't. And so I think it's pretty clear that Aaron Mendenhall will be the next mayor of Salt Lake City. And so I think it will be interesting. In this race, I will just say people always ask, well, you know, what factor changes an election factor, right? And what factor do you think changed the election factor for between the two candidates? What was the dividing issue?
I'm not sure. And I think, you know, some might say the inland port, but it wouldn't suggest that from these results.
I was going to say they were all like, the inland port's horrible. So they, yeah.
Right. Though it may have had some impact in other council races. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I don't know. And
they talk about voter turnout on the east being higher than voter turnout on the west. So mm-hmm. that would figure in here just yeah. because one, just based on where they
Absolutely.
Reside.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I think what this is an ongoing testament to is the way that you organize your ground game and the way mm-hmm. that you're prioritizing precincts, the way that you're thinking through the votes that you're going to go after, and having a sophisticated machine around that is really important in these races. And we saw it in places like South Salt Lake, where Natalie Pinckney had an amazing ground game and did great work. In Sandy, where we had two people vying for Brooke D'Souza and Monica Zoltansky, both had good ground games. Monica knocked on so many doors, and it's neck and neck. It's a really tight race.
Yeah.
So that kind of intense, focused ground game, I think, is so important. And it's possible that ultimately is what's leading to this result.
Yeah.
So
at
as I
time,
go ahead.
You go ahead, Dan. Then
no,
I just,
you. I
well,
to
I was going to say, okay, at the time of this recording, you know, we don't know the final count, but I do think I'd like to say a couple of nice things about Luz Escamilla.
Yeah,
because you know, she is such a outstanding senator who reaches agreement, who is a Democrat who passes legislation.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, hard. If you try to think of words that describe her, you'd think of honorable, effective, caring, smart. She's the daughter of two college professors.
Yeah,
she's got some great DNA in her.
Yeah,
and could we be so lucky as to have another campaign like this again in our state?
Yeah.
It
yeah.
just is such a class act,
yes.
what we just witnessed.
So the only classless thing was Rocky's act.
Correct.
Right? As I think back on the race, and they both distanced themselves, and I think Mayor-elect Mendenhall, if I can say that, mm-hmm. you know, distanced herself from the comments. It would have been interesting. The academic in me mm-hmm. would love to know how much of that was Rocky's comment.
Mm.
I think there is an element, and I thought it was 5 points, right?
Mm-hmm.
It turns out it's eight,
mm-hmm.
right? But because, you know, if you split the eight, you're back to, you know, 50-50. So, but I think there is a faction in Salt Lake City who, regardless of the policy or regardless of the position, will never support another Mormon,
mm-hmm.
period.
Yeah.
Whether they're members of the church, not members of the church, I expect you to argue with me. But I will tell you, I suspected back in the beginning that it was 5 points based on polling numbers that I had seen from another candidate on point on that issue. And the question I saw was a 5-point deal, and it may be more, it may be less. But there is a faction in Salt Lake City that just does not like the church. And, you know, Rocky making that a campaign issue, I thought was sleazy. That's
yeah.
my take.
Yeah.
So I would say I was a North Dakotan before I was a Utahan. I've been here a decade. I find that there is a lot of still consternation and a lot of strong feelings on either side of this for people who I think have spent their whole lives in Utah.
Yeah.
This city's changing, and there are a lot of people, and I don't know that it's that big of a deal for people that don't have, you know,
long roots here.
Long roots here, uh-huh. or feel like they have a dog mm-hmm. in that fight. I talked to so many people who just didn't care about that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a changing. That's a way that the city is changing. It's also, I think, a sense that, you know, for many, I think, progressives in the city, they find themselves standing shoulder to shoulder with members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day
yeah.
Saints around
yeah.
issues like whether it's gun violence or the environment, many, many ways that there's so much common ground. But, you know, I think it might be different if you've had a much longer cultural experience rooted in growing up here.
There's yeah. an old Chamber of Commerce saying, one of the old Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce bosses, he said, in Utah, we're all Mormons. We're either active Mormons, ex-Mormons, Jack Mormons, you know,
yeah,
former
yeah,
Mormons.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good quote.
Yeah.
You know, because
no,
it's
is.
Just sort
Great.
Of saying, you know, we kind of define ourselves that way. But to Shireen's point, the city and state is changing rapidly. It's one of the axioms of growth that
yeah.
we're, you know, talking about from the Gardner Institute is that Utah's changing ... fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really envision a future, and these two candidates embodied it, where we don't define ourselves that way, and
yeah.
we define ourselves as part of the human family that are trying
yeah.
to have great communities.
Yeah, I would just say it is an opportunity for Mayor Mendenhall to kind of build something around that, right? And to show if what Shireen says is correct, I would say that that would be a good opportunity for her to kind of reach out and find a way to make that happen. Yeah. And honestly, if there's anybody capable of it, I do think she's capable of it.
Yeah. Aaron Mendenhall is another class act.
Yeah.
Okay, class act. Let's do another one. Governor Herbert sends a letter to Donald Trump basically saying, we'll take more refugees here in Utah. It lit up on social media. I know when I follow Twitter, there's very rare, I don't do a lot of likes. I just kind of observe. I'm
lurk,
a voyeur.
Lurk.
But I touched the heart. You know, I was liking it. Good for Governor Herbert. So quick commentary from the two of you.
I would say it's very in keeping with what I think the vast majority of Utahns would like to see from their leaders. As you know, I canvassed across the state and talked to people from all the way to the edge of, you know, Big Water down on Lake Powell up far into Davis County. And the issue of immigration, what was happening at our border, the rhetoric and feelings around refugees and I think more broadly immigrants in this state is something I'm very proud of. I think that there is, you know, we've seen some, I think, very vile responses online about this. But the vast majority of people that I interacted with, I would say this is in keeping with our shared values around inclusivity and being a welcoming space.
We have a leader in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that I would encourage, you know, both members of the faith and non-members to become familiar with. His name is Patrick Kieran, Elder Patrick Kieran, K-E-A-R-O-N. But he delivered a speech at the church's general conference speaking to this issue of refugees. Yeah. He had been over church in Europe, and so he'd had firsthand experience with refugees coming off of boats and just the services provided. But it is one of the most touching talks you'll ever hear or read.
I think Governor Herbert did the right thing. And I think there are, I think there's many examples in the state of Utah where we step up and kind of handle those kinds of things, especially refugees. I look at it, you know, my little L libertarian in me is like, look, we're out there creating most of these refugees with, you know, with whatever perpetual war is going on or whatever it may be. It is the very least we can do that when people are of innocence are displaced. That we bring them in.
Yeah. One of Kieran's.
Especially with the vetting process, I thought that was one of the things that was most frustrating about some of the dialogue online is, well, if they come here legally, the process that refugees go through is such a extensive process. And it is, you know.
People saw the camps that they lived in before while they're waiting for placement.
High level of vetting they go through.
70 million of them worldwide. And one of the things that Kieran makes a point in his talk is that when you get to know refugees, they're just like us in terms of they represent the diversity of the human family. School teachers, you know, mine workers.
So I know the crazy. I know the crazy element and reaction that was out there. I will say there is a. I think there's a fair argument for how do you bring in a lot of refugees or more refugees and those kinds of things. I think there's a fair question of how do you bring them in, support them. You know, help them with education, help them get jobs, help them be productive. How do you help them?
Has to be done right.
They want
to
be that way anyways.
Yeah.
And I think Utah does a great job with that. How do you make sure that they're not a cost? You know, for people who travel internationally, you know, it is tough. Like if you see what Paris has become in the northern neighborhoods, if you haven't been to Paris, I know this sounds so snooty. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry about that. It's just who I am. But if you haven't been to the northern neighborhoods in Paris, the refugee problem there is stark and it is dramatic.
Mm-hmm. You're saying that they haven't.
They're doing a poor job.
They haven't. What's the right word?
Assimilated well.
Yes.
Right? Right.
Yeah.
And I will say that lack of assimilation or that fear, that risk is, I think, what's out there as a worst case scenario. And obviously we don't have that in Utah. But I just... From those who they get thrown as xenophobic or racist or whatever they say, I think if I was to sum up their concern is how do we do it so we continue to do it the right way in a sustainable way that's a good way. And I think that's a fair question.
Shireen, we have time for quick gripes. I know you've got a gripe ready.
So my gripe is it's both something that I'd love to see and a little bit of a gripe. I know that we need more housing. I know we need affordable housing. I want to see the Utah Theater saved downtown.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. That's a voice that some people resonate with and some are just ready to move on.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
Dan, do you have a gripe?
Yes, I don't like to gripe about the weather because it's not like, you know, it's not easy and not like we can do anything about it. But the cold snap last week was very unwelcome. And I'm just going to say at the end of the day, it really messed up like golf season.
Oh,
it messed
yeah.
up so much of my own.
So sorry.
I was so cold, you know, poor me. I was in a blanket all week. I wore thermals in November. That's terrible.
That was October.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and I was trick-or-treating in a parka. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Okay, so I'm going to
Can we move Halloween to the first Saturday in October?
Yeah.
And just agree from now on?
I'm going to do the Jim DeBacchus thing and not do a gripe, but congratulate the Huntsman family for their amazing gift to the University of Utah.
Yeah.
100 and, what, $50 million for Mental Health
so
Research
amazing.
Institute. That is go Utes, go Huntsman family, go Utah. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.